Welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast, where we will bring you some of the most interesting interviews and features from the world of tech. Visit irishtechnews.ie and check out our podcast section to explore all of our previous episodes. You can subscribe to our podcast using whatever your favorite app or service is by visiting anchor.fm/irish-tech-news.
Hi everyone, just a quick favor to ask before we get going. Our podcast has gone from strength to strength lately, but we'd like to find out how we can improve. We've put together a short survey and we would love to get your feedback. Anyone who takes the time to give their feedback will be entered into competitions where they can win prizes such as smartphones, cameras and drones. So please visit irishtechnews.ie/podcast-feedback. That's irishtechnews.ie/podcast-feedback. Fill out the survey and to be given a chance of winning one of those great prizes. Thanks for your time, and now back to the podcast.
Hi, welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast. Today I'm talking with Cape Clear co-founder David Clark, who's recently joined the board of Kelvar as a chair. How are you doing, David?
I'm good, Ronan, thank you. Thank you, how are you?
Great, thanks. Now, before we start, tell us a bit about your background.
Yeah, I've been in the tech industry for a while. I'm Irish, born and bred here, went to Trinity College and did a computer science degree, and shortly after college, I joined a company called Iona, which was one of the early Irish tech startups. So I joined them in like 1995. And so that was quite a big company. We grew quite fast. We ended up going public on NASDAQ. But it was everyone's first job and none of us really knew what we were doing. So the company struggled in the long term to grow. So after that, myself and a few of the Iona guys went and set up another company called Cape Clear, which was aiming to help essentially integrate systems on the internet. Because we felt the internet was going to be a thing. Turned out it was. And we ran that company for about 10 years. Raised a lot of venture capital and grew it quite successfully. And in 2008, we got acquired by an American company called Workday, which was set up by the former founders of PeopleSoft, a big HR ERP company.
Yep.
And they were rebuilding essentially the ERP systems for the cloud via Workday. And they acquired Cape Clear, and Cape Clear became quite an important part of the Workday technology and product story, and then spent the last 12 years until late last year in Workday in a variety of roles, running essentially running their engineering and product organizations, and spent about half that time over in California in San Francisco, running teams for Workday while we grew. And Workday grew from a pretty small company to what is now a large company, doing about $4 billion in revenue, publicly listed, valued at about $6 billion, 20,000 employees worldwide, including, I think, about 2,000 here in Dublin now. So, yeah, interesting journey. And I was there late last year.
So you worked there a lot with their ads on YouTube. So if they're doing that, a lot of ads in there, this means they're doing very well.
Yeah, they are. I mean, I think it's one of these funny things where, a lot of technology companies, including quite big ones, are either known to the public or really known to the public based on their visibility to, civilians or end users. So companies like YouTube, Google, Facebook are very prominent and familiar, but there are a lot of big business sector companies like Workday that are, in many ways as big and as significant to the global economy as the likes of Facebook, but just aren't as well known because they're not typically used by end users, they're used by corporations or employees. So it's one of these interesting, divisions in the software industry, and obviously Kelvar would fall in that second category of business software that does powerful, important, and interesting things, but that isn't necessarily that well known to the man on the street, if you like.
And about Cape Clear, how do you get that name? Because I ask, because a colleague of mine, Simon Cocking, is based in Cape Clear, off Cork.
Yeah, that's right, I knew that. Well, I guess in Iona is an island off the west coast of Scotland, so we sort of liked the original island motif, so we thought, hey, we'll go with another island when we set up Cape Clear, and Cape Clear is, I think, the point in geographically in Ireland that's close to America, and we expected, and it was the case, that a lot of our business and financing and other relationships would be with America, so we felt that proximity was meaningful, so we went with that. Also, frankly, the domain name was available, which is a consideration. So.
Yeah, because I guess when you sit in a company, the first thing I think of, you're thinking of a name, then find out you got a great name, but the domain name's gone, and if you want to buy it, you're going to be charged a lot of money. I've seen it in the past.
That's right. I mean, when you set up a company, you've got all these difficult and scary existential questions to deal with. So I certainly have always found it's easier to focus on the name and the logo rather than the what are we actually going to do and how are we going to instead of, which is of course the real question.
There are three companies that set up a name, and the name is something really weird. I'm thinking, what does that name relate to when it comes to the business? But mainly it's because we have to get the main name, and we have to have a name that basically was so weird it stands out, that when you think of it, Cape Clear's name stands out. And you get a company with a name that stands, people are going to remember it more so than a generic name.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I guess the other consideration is often, especially tech companies, end up pivoting and not necessarily doing exactly what they thought they would be doing when they started out. So, you know, for that reason, having a sort of a fungible or a changeable name is useful. So you're not totally tied down. Like if you call yourself Widget X Company, and then it turns out you end up not making Widget X, but Widget Z, you know, it can be hard to change your name. So having a generic name like Cape Clear, like Twitter, which is not, you know, necessarily, because Twitter didn't start doing Twitter, of course, so, you know, they pivoted. So I think it's, it's something you put a disproportionate amount of time into early in small companies' lives, because it's one of these more manageable questions.
Yeah, and I guess if you're starting a company, the first thing you want to do is spend hours trying to find the right name. Just look at what domain names are available and which name you think would suit you, because I said earlier, if you go to pivot, surely you got to have a name that can reflect the pivoting, so it doesn't really stick to that.
Right, exactly. So I think something kind of vaguely impressive, sufficiently general to be applied to different things, and available as a domain name. They were, I think, the three criteria, and for us, the island thing. I need to talk to Alan. I'm not sure how he selected Kielvar as the name of Kielvar, so I do need to ask Alan, but he's the CEO and founder.
If you got a name like Titan can be used for so many different ways. Something like that would stand out, because you're thinking of basically one of the space moons, or you're thinking of Greek of old mythology. But that kind of name stands out because no one knows what exactly where it's going. So a name like that, like Cape Clear as well, no one knows what it actually is, because I never heard of Cape Clear until Simon moved there. I didn't know it existed. And I said, Simon, it reminds me of Craggy Island. It's a little place below, but there's so much going on there. Like, he's always talking about, I'm flying my drones, there's gin distilleries here. Things you wouldn't think in smiles. It's great living here. I'm thinking, that's like Craggy Island. There's so much going on there you didn't know about.
Yeah, a couple of times they have an annual storytelling festival, which I unfortunately never got to attend because I was usually off, you know, trying to build and sell software. But we did sponsor it a couple of times, the Cape Clear Storytelling Festival. So we did sponsor it, so yeah, it remains on the bucket list to get back there when we can travel again. So.
Yeah, and again, back to basically the main part of the company about Kielvar. Tell me exactly what it does.
So Kielvar does sourcing optimization and automation. So what that means is they help companies who are managing typically large and complex procurement activities.
Yeah.
They help them manage them efficiently and get them done quickly and expeditiously. So it's all about sourcing and procurement optimization and automation.
So I guess that's probably done by AI.
Yeah, it is. I mean, historically, this kind of activity would have been done by humans. So, you know, if you were a company like Siemens and you were wanting to buy like 5,000 components for your factories, you would set up a big process. You'd issue contracts to people. They'd issue responses. You'd analyze them. You'd look at them. There'd be questions. There'd be answers. There'd be responses. There may be multiple rounds of bidding. So typically, you know, managing those kind of multi-competitor, multi-item procurement processes was complex and difficult and labor-intensive. So, you know, over the last 20 years or so, there's been a category of software and technology has emerged to help optimize or improve those processes. So, this is one of the early pioneers in the area. It was a company called Ariba, which is now owned by SAP. Mm-hmm. So a lot of companies who were early on this would have used Ariba to help manage or automate some of those processes. As things have got more sophisticated and moved into the cloud, there's been certainly new technology possibilities to make this, I guess, even better. And as you say, machine learning and artificial intelligence are techniques that can be applied to make those processes more efficient. So one of the things that Kielvar is doing is trying to use bots, essentially, to manage these processes, because a lot of the interactions that happen, a lot of the workflows that happen, while complicated, are actually, you know, they can't be described formally. So you can handle those in an automated fashion, increasingly using bots. So, you know, when questions about the terms of the contract, like, do I have to offer a discount if I ship early? Is there a penalty if I don't ship on time? Do I have to bid in batches of 20 or 50 or 100 items? Can I bid for this batch and not that batch? Those are the kind of questions that come up typically in procurement processes, and they can be quite labor-intensive to handle. So, you know, having an automated system that can handle those on your behalf without needing any human intervention is super valuable to big companies.
And I guess if you're dealing with the same client again and again, the AI will learn from that. So when it's doing a next round of procurement, it knows what it did last time, so it can just go ahead and do what was done before.
Exactly. So I think one of the things we're trying to do with Kiovar is to run more and more procurement processes of different types for different companies, and then the more you see, the better you can get, as you say. And you know, by applying data analysis and machine learning techniques, you know, you can get better at progressively as you do more and as you see more. And this is certainly something I saw on Workday, where you know, the more that we processed financial and HR data for companies, the more we understood that kind of data. So as an example, in Workday's case, it would be salary information. Like, a great question or an important question in companies is often, what should I be paying this person? And that's a hard question to answer if you don't have access to a lot of data.
Yeah.
But within Workday, we had, over time, via all these big companies we had lots of access to lots of data about salaries. So we were able to offer, you know, in-context recommendations. So you're saying, look, you're a manager of a graduate doing skilled administrative work in Toledo. Toledo's in Ohio, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you're in a certain spot, you could look at what's the market like for these people, and you could get given, you know, a representative view of what that would be. And likewise for QFAR in sourcing, as we see lots and lots of these processes, we can learn from that, we can get better at it, and we can help our customers do these things more efficiently over time.
And when you mentioned about salaries, I guess you could also determine what time of the year is the best to get to have a wage increase.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, your view on what the best time is might differ if you're the employee or the employer.
Yeah.
And equally, you know, if you're running a procurement process, best can mean different things. Like, you know, 3 weeks ago when there was or 2 weeks ago when there was a tanker stuck sideways in the Suez Canal, the best way to get freight from, you know, Asia to Europe was actually around the south of Africa for a while. So systems that are kind of flexible and responsive, and that's exactly the kind of situation that a key of our process could have taken account of. We could have said, look, you know, we're going to, even for ongoing procurement processes or shipping planning processes, we're going to require that the shipping is not via the Suez Canal, but is actually via Africa. So you need to take that into account in your bid. So the capability of these systems, not just to be data aware, but to be flexible so that you can respond to these kind of changing situations is important. And, you know, supply chains used to be a minority interest, but I think, you know, increasingly, and it's back to this, what we touched about earlier in terms of the man in the street, everyone is affected by very global and distributed supply chains, which are complex. And, you know, people are acutely aware of this stuff now with vaccine procurement and, you know, different inputs for vaccines coming from different places and the effects of Brexit on supply chains in Ireland, for example. So people understand that, you know, supply chains are important, and managing them is complex, and doing that well is a strategic advantage. And that's why big companies are now increasingly looking at solutions, especially like Kiovar, to help them manage these complex supply chains and the procurement processes within them in this very efficient way.
Because you've got to think in the future there could be another Suez Canal debacle, and you've got to make sure that you can purpose, and when that happens, you've got to tell basically your clients that if you have to go around the Cape Horn of Africa, it's going to take more time, it's going to be more cost, but be prepared for that.
Exactly.
That could happen.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think, you know, one of the things that Kiovar is doing is building bots that are specific to these different kinds of freight modalities. So we have a shipping bot, we have an air freight bot, we have a sea transport bot, and they can be aware of those kinds of variables. And again, these things can change because, like, whatever, 4 years ago after that volcano erupted in, was it Iceland? I'm not even going to try to pronounce it. But, you know, air travel was grounded for 2 weeks, 9/11, likewise. So, the ability of these bots to, you know, be sensitive to and flexible in these, you know, unpredictable situations is super important.
You don't want a scenario where at the last minute a client suddenly faced with a bill they weren't expecting. If the boss can tell them in advance that this is what it's going to be, but if changes in travel happen, because maybe a volcano or blockage in the Suez, there could be X percent more added on top of this.
That's right, yeah, and they're the kinds of contingencies you need to take account of as a business that's running this. And I think, you know, I think the automation is important. Like, the sort of, as Kievar sees it, two phases in managing these kind of large-scale procurements. The first thing is optimization. So from the company's point of view, am I getting, you know, the best deal as measured by whatever dimension matters to me, whether it's the quickest or the cheapest or the highest quality. So a lot of work in the first generation of procurement was around optimization, getting, like, the, in quotes, the best outcome. But increasingly now, the emphasis is not around just optimization, but around automation. So around being able to manage these procurement processes to achieve an optimal outcome, but without having to have tons of people involved in the process. So that, because that, you know, not having people involved makes it more efficient, obviously, and it makes it potentially more flexible as well. And that's where the automation of the bots come in, and like that's where we're really talking about. Yeah. Alan, the CEO, talks a lot about autonomous procurement and draws an analogy with, like, self-driving cars, where, you know, you want to eventually get to a level where these sort of procurement and sourcing events can run themselves without needing any human intervention whatsoever. So.
And I guess right now, during the pandemic, because lots of people aren't at work anymore, because you've now got these bots, it's making sure that it's done seamlessly without issues.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, correct. And, you know, at some point, you know, obviously humans always have to be involved, and they provide the original expertise, they configure the things, and there's always going to be situations where, for some reason, like, a bot can't handle a scenario. You know, like the Google analogy was, I remember seeing Chris Ormston, I think, was one of the original self-driving guys at Google, and said, you know, they thought they'd seen everything in an autonomous car situation, and then one day they got a sort of feedback from a car, and it was stopped in Palo Alto because there was an old woman in a wheelchair chasing a flock of geese in circles on the road. You know, that's not something, you know, you kind of would expect. And, you know, likewise, or, you know, analogously, there are situations in procurement scenarios where there's unforeseeable events that humans may need to intervene in. But by and large, you want to automate the automatable things and make the thing as autonomous as possible. So, you know.
Because right now, during a pandemic, you don't want to have a lot of people in your office working. If you can do this, the humans are the last call, but they can't be called upon. Because right now in the pandemic,
Right. We're
all remote working. But the fact that you've got a mode of automated, I mean, if someone's remote working, they can be called to do something at the last minute if needs be, but they're not to be an end all of it.
Yeah, correct. So I think, you know, there's a lot of procurement activity being run right now by Kievar bots, by Kievar systems, which is certainly help keep things ticking over, even while the pandemic is on, as you say. So again, the company's expanding a lot. I mean, it's part of the reason that I got involved here is that they've been around for a number of years and been successful, but middle of last year they raised a new round of financing and really, you know, are taking up a new level of ambition, because I think they know this is a huge market. They've seen the demand. They've got really great early customers, and they want to actually try and grow into a very large organization, very large company. So I think the market's there to do that. I think they have the products and the technology. I think they've got the customers. And you know, I've seen this movie a couple of times in some of my early companies that we talked about, and particularly Workday. So I think I'm pleased to join the Kievar team to help them scale from being, you know, a successful startup into being, you know, a major multinational player in the procurement and sourcing arena.
Because I guess your experience with Workday has helped you with this, and you're probably thinking now, I want these guys to become maybe a unicorn, if possible. Do better than they can do.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, unicorndom is always a fraught status. But, you know, I certainly look at Kievar and I see a lot of similarities to other small or early companies that have been involved with that have been successful. So I think, to me, Kievar looks in ways quite like Iona did, where there was like a strong academic background and academic involvement with the founding team. So there was some real deep, you know, intellectual property and expertise in the core product. I think I see that similarity with Iona. I think I see a similarity with Workday, where, you know, the whole of the business world is moving its systems from on-premise into the cloud. Like, that's happening, and that's the secular trend that Workday benefited from. And I think, you know, Kievar will benefit from the same trend. And I think, you know, again, as the complexity and the cost and importance of these complex global supply chains is increasingly an issue and is understood to be an issue, big companies are now investing heavily to do that stuff better. And I think Kievar is well positioned to benefit from that trend. So, and it also made in all the companies I've been in, I've made many mistakes. And I think one thing I'm hoping to help Guildford do is avoid some of the more avoidable mistakes that that I've had the pain of living through.
Yeah.
So let's, you know, try and you know, have a smooth passage here.
And I guess also because you're at a time right now where technology has evolved to a certain extent that you can remote work. 10 years ago, you couldn't do what you're doing now. Or if you could, it would be too costly.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think, you know, QFAR is a lot of the engineering team is based in Cork, but we've increasingly got people all over the world. A lot of services and business parts of the organization are in the States. We've got people all over Europe. And I think, yeah, the company is already quite distributed in terms of people. And I think that's just going to continue and accelerate, which I think is great. And I think it's a big benefit for a software company early to set themselves up to work that way, because it's hard to retrofit. Like, if you're accustomed to having giant offices with tons of people in them, it's hard to build a company culture and a company technical culture that is amenable to remote working. But I think, you know, QFR has been doing it from quite early and is well positioned, I think, to keep doing it.
So. Yeah, because I'm thinking about 10 years ago, smartphones were just starting to become more usable. Now understand that, Kate, and everyone's nowadays can go online via smartphone, tablet, or laptop because they're so cheap. 10 years ago, that wasn't the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's totally true. I think for a company like QFAR, like access to development talent is really fundamental because, you know, the stuff that we're building is sophisticated. We need very talented developers, and, you know, it's the more you can look globally for those people, the better. And I think that, you know, it's the remote working is actually, it's a plus for it.
Yeah. I can remember 10 years ago when you were on the cloud was charged per instance. Not anymore, which means it's cheaper now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, different companies kind of price different ways. I think at the lowest level of the stack, like Amazon and Google and Microsoft are still charging you per hour, per megabyte, per second, whatever. But I think, obviously, companies who are higher up the application stack, like QFAR, are more charging for the value in the applications they're offering, not in the kind of the micro, you know, billing of exactly how much compute power you're using, I guess. But yeah, it's getting cheaper all the time. It's Moore's law, right?
Yeah, and what's your next plan for QFAR? How are you going to get to the next level?
So I think, for me, a lot of the basic pieces are in place for this company to grow a lot and to become a lot more successful. I think the products are there, the vision is there, the technical talent is there. I think the ambition has always been there as well, and really what I'm hoping to do is just support the team in, you know, realizing that ambition and not compromising on it, because I think they have an opportunity to be, you know, a company with hundreds of millions of dollars of turnover, if not billions. And I think, you know, I've seen Workday go from like $5 million in revenue annually to $4 billion. And, you know, I've seen that done, and I've seen what it takes to do that. And I'm hoping to bring some of that perspective to QFAR to help them navigate the journey. Because, like I said, I get asked to join and advise a lot of companies, and most of them I say no to because I don't see the right combination of market opportunity, proven capability, and technical talent and business talent, and QFAR, I do see that combination. So I think they have the potential to go a long way.
And also, I guess you parallel that when you were starting off with Workday, you saw how they were going to grow, and you noticed the mistakes they made, and you want to make sure that QFAR, you think they're going to go the same way as Workday, but I want to make sure when they do this, they don't do the mistakes we made. They do it differently.
Exactly. And we used to joke about this in Workday, that you don't want to make the same mistake twice. The problem is, you know, it's surprising how many new types of mistake one can find to make. But I think for me, actually, with companies like this, you're going to make mistakes and things are going to happen that surprise you. You know, things are going to go wrong with the product. Things are going to happen to you in the market. Competitors are going to do unexpected things. So the key thing is, as a company, how do you react to that? Like, are you resilient? Can you bounce back? Can you overcome sort of the inevitable setbacks that are just a fact of startup life? And again, when I've seen the QFAR team, they have a lot of the right DNA around that. But I think helping, you know, coach the team about being resilient in response to different kinds of technical technical and business challenges that they're absolutely going to experience is something I'm hoping to do. And yeah, if we end up making different mistakes than we made at Workday, that'll certainly be a result.
But to me, mistake means basically it's not bad, it's good, because you learn from that. Because when you don't get mistakes, and suddenly you've got one facing you, you haven't had one before, what do you do? At least along the way, you get some bumps in the road. You know what you know how to fix. Oh, that prompted, that can be easily fixed. I'll just change this or change that. Whereas later on in life, that hasn't happened, and suddenly you face a problem. You don't know what to do, because so far it's been a success.
That's right. That's exactly right. I think it's resilience, so an ability to handle and not be put off by the inevitable disappointments, mistakes, errors, failures that you have. And you know, even in companies as successful as Workday was, like, there was a lot of stuff went wrong. And just, I think, the ability of a company to handle that and not get sort of put off by it or depressed or kind of deterred by it is really important. And equally, I've seen companies who are not resilient and who do panic and who don't sort of react well under pressure, and that's a bad characteristic, because you need to be able to bounce back and handle setbacks thoughtfully and without sort of panicking.
Yeah, and also I guess be prepared to use a P word, pivot, because you're going to be doing that a lot in your business. You're going to be doing so well, and suddenly, for example, if you face a crisis like we are now with the pandemic, and your business suddenly is not faced with that, you got to think, how do we pivot and use this to an advantage?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it's I think I would say that as a company, you really want to be right on the big questions. So and some bets, aren't pivotable, if you like. So, yeah. I mean, for Keelvar, we're a procurement and sourcing company, so that's the area we're in. But what I do think is that's a big space, and within that, it could be that we'll find, faster uptake or traction or success in maybe a surprising segment of the market. Like, we might find that the market for ocean freight bots is actually much bigger than we thought, and bigger than the air freight market, which we had thought would be bigger. So, something we saw in Workday is that, we were operating across a bunch of lines of business, and we had theories and plans about which ones were going to grow fastest and be most profitable and be easiest. And frankly, those theories were often wrong. But across the portfolio, we would say, well, it turns out that financial sales in Asia are much stronger than manufacturing sales in Europe, which we didn't expect. But hey, we're going to go with that. We're going to double down on financial sales in Asia. We're going to do more on the product, and we're going to ride that wave. And then we'll figure out why the European stuff is slower. Likewise for Keelvar, I think we've got a portfolio of things. We have a set of theories about what's going to grow quickly and why, and some of them are going to be wrong. So hopefully they won't all be wrong. Yeah. I'm confident they won't. And then we just need to be ready to back the winners within our sort of stable and figure out how to make the less successful lines of business more successful over time. So it's a portfolio strategy. You want to back winners, and you want to be flexible in terms of backing the winners.
And I guess now and again, if something happens, turn it to be a loss, you're not too worried, because you've got more than one portfolio you're banking on.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the company already has, as I mentioned, a suite of products around both sourcing optimization and then sourcing automation, which are two related but different markets. And already we have multiple customers in both areas. We have both are rapidly growing, so actually there's not much to choose between them right now. But I think you want to have a portfolio so that essentially you don't really have all your eggs in one basket, and you can sort of react to different demand profiles over time in those different areas.
And I guess if we're thinking back, you're talking about you're back in different transportation methods. I'm guessing maybe in the future you'll be looking at space as well. For example, delivering satellites or other products.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. That's not the business plan for 2021. But over time, why not? And I think it's what, like what we said earlier about you do something a lot, you learn from it, and you get better at it. I think most modes of transport at some level are similar. They're about getting things from A to B. They have different characteristics in terms of price and speed and how you can pack things and container size and so on. But at some level, like, transport is transport. So for sure, we could see a space bot on it. Like I said, not on the revenue plan.
No, I'm thinking basically more in 10, 15 years. When someone like Elon Musk has started doing that a lot more, and others come into his sphere and start using that. For example, right now Elon Musk and his satellites for broadband that are now in Kerry, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that being...
Yeah, SpaceLink. Yeah, SpaceLink. Yeah, they're up and running, I think, in beta. And that's right. And that's like I worked on years ago. There was a previous effort called Iridium, which Motorola had tried to launch, which was like a low Earth orbit satellite constellation to provide cell phone services. And I worked on that back in Iona like 20 years ago. But unfortunately, the cell phones or the handsets that you had to use were the size of like small fridges. Yeah. So it didn't make for a particularly good mobile experience. And also, you got a suspicious tan on one side of your face, more or less, from using it. It was emitting so much radiation. So I think, technology's moved on.
Yeah,
satellite broadband is.
Remember about 10 years ago, Pirate Bay wanted to do have the servers up in the cloud and with balloons. I don't think that took off, but they thought the idea was once they're up in the air, basically we're an international, we're not over any country as such. So in other words, it's harder to police it. And I can see where technology is going to come to that stage where you've got to decide how is it going to be policed, what's going to happen, and what we do then. And I'm sure you guys are going to be right now planning for that, because that could happen one day where you're going to be thinking, how do we manage this?
Yeah, I mean, again, I think... As we've talked about, a lot of what we're dealing with is inherently transnational, multinational spans, boundaries and jurisdictions already. So the nature of procurement and these kind of supply chains that Keelbar operates in and with is that they're international and they span all these boundaries, legal and otherwise. So I think we've seen a lot already. I think what we're doing is, it's not, I think, challenging in the way that some of the technologies you mentioned are. I mean, like Facebook and Google face much more difficult, I think, challenges around privacy and data ownership and censorship and so on, which, they're interesting questions, but really, happily, they don't arise for an enterprise company like Keelbar. We do have legal complexities, but they're manageable and they're not sort of philosophical in a sense like what some of the other companies face.
And I guess Keelbar Forfinch is going to be here for the long haul, not going to be within 5 years sold on to somebody else.
No, I mean, the company was set up already 8 years ago, so it's in a sense a startup, but it's also been around for a while. So I think that's testament to the commitment of the team. They're committed to the long haul here. Like I said, we raised this big financing round, $18 million last summer, and that's really a statement of intent. Because this was a profitable business, so it could easily have ticked along where it was, but the founding team wanted to essentially go big with this, and that's the plan we have. And I think, like I said, the team is there, the product is there, the market is there, and we have a chance to execute over the next few years to make this into a really substantial company.
And I guess your aim was to try and think like a startup, but not be a startup.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. Yeah, we want to be. Yeah, we want to have all the good bits. And this is a startup, it's a 50-person or so company, so it's a small company, everybody knows each other. I remember in Iona the day that we went from sorting the telephone directory by first name to sorting it by last name, and that was a sign we'd get over a certain size. So
yeah.
Like in Keelbar now, we're still at the first name thing, where there's three people called John, there's two Marys, so people know which are which. And that's kind of, it's a great stage of a company when you have that level of size and intimacy where everyone can know everyone else.
Yeah.
But eventually that has to go. Like in Workday, we went from that point to 50 people up to 20,000. So at some point you can't know everybody. But then the company has different strengths when it gets bigger.
Yeah, I guess so. When a company gets bigger, you've done it right, because you've grown to that stage and you think, well, how do you make sure that we manage that size?
Exactly. And, managing through those phases of growth is absolutely challenging. And there's many ways to screw that up. And, that's hopefully something I can bring to the key of our board from having been through in Workday is, how do you manage that growth? And growth in people is the major thing that challenges companies, like finding people, hiring them, organizing them, managing them, motivating them, even as the company gets bigger and bigger. And I think, doing that well is really one of the main differences between successful companies and companies that fail. And I think often having a strong culture is the most important anchor to help a company grow successfully, because you can always reorganize, you can always hire different managers or new managers, but if the company hasn't got a strong identity and culture, it's hard to scale the company. And like that was something we spent a lot of time on Workday, defining, building, protecting the company's culture, so that then even as you went from 50 to 100 to 1,000 to 10,000 people, it was still a recognizable shared purpose. And Gilver has a lot of those elements. And again, that's something I'm going to be working with Alan and the team on from the board point of view to help make sure that we define and protect Gilver's culture even as it grows.
Yep. And I guess I also mean to make sure that what the ethos though is going to be this. So when you look at the recent statement, it's going to be the same as when you were 10 employees to when you're 1,000 employees. It won't change.
Correct. That would be ideal. Yeah. If you're doing what you said you would do, but just at a bigger scale.
Yeah. And on that note, I'll say thanks very much for that great chat. Have a great day, David, and good luck in the future. And hopefully, within next few years, you guys will be basically hopefully a unicorn or have done what you tend to do.
Yeah. Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate the conversation. And yeah, hopefully I'll be back here in the not too distant future talking about Kilobyte's growth in the past tense as well as in the future tense.
Yeah, so, and I hope you're also talking about the space race as well.
That too.
All right, take care, have a great day, and thanks for that.
Great. Thanks, man. You thanks. Too.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the latest Irish Tech News podcast. Check back every day for the latest episode. You can follow us on Twitter @Irish_Tech News, on Facebook, facebook.com/Irish Tech News, on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/company/Irish-Tech-News, on Instagram, instagram.com/IrishTechNews.ie, and on TikTok, tiktok.com/@IrishTechNews.